Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are really getting into something fascinating. The Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yes, they're one of the most significant, but also, frankly, misunderstood archaeological finds ever.
Yeah, definitely. We've been digging into Timothy Lim's work on them and, you know, the real story behind these ancient fragments. It's actually much more interesting than all the myths and speculation.
That's really Lim's whole point, isn't it? He treats the scrolls with the seriousness they deserve. I mean, this was the biggest manuscript discovery of the 20th century.
Right.
And it's not just like dusty old history. It provides this incredible context that really forces us to rethink the beginnings of both Judaism and Christianity.
And why that matters now, for you listening, is that these scrolls just shatter any idea that ancient religions were simple or, you know, all agreed on everything.
Exactly. They pull us right into this incredibly dynamic, sometimes messy period of religious experimentation, the Second Temple period.
Can you quickly remind us what that time frame is?
Sure. So roughly, it's from when the Second Temple in Jerusalem was rebuilt around 516 BCE,
yeah,
after the exile in Babylon.
Okay.
All the way until the Romans destroyed that same temple in 70 CE. So it's this long stretch, like 500 plus years.
Wow.
And it was a time of intense debate and development. You had different Jewish groups sort of vying for influence, figuring out what it meant to follow God's law in their time.
Okay, so let's get into our guide for this journey, Timothy Lim. He seems incredibly qualified.
Oh, absolutely. He's a professor of Hebrew Bible and Second Temple Judaism at the University of Edinburgh, got his PhD from Oxford.
Impressive.
And crucially, he has deep expertise in the original languages, Hebrew, Aramaic, Greek. Plus, he was actually involved in the official international team studying the scrolls for decades.
So he's seen the fragments up close.
He has. And what makes his perspective so valuable, I think, is that he approaches it purely as a historian.
Right.
He's not trying to prove a particular religious point, nor is he like trying to debunk everything for the sake of it. He just wants to understand these texts in their original context.
So he's kind of the myth buster, the one cutting through the noise.
Pretty much. He takes all this complex scholarship and makes it clear, correcting a lot of the sensationalism that's built up around the scrolls over the years.
Yeah, you hear all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Vatican conspiracies, hidden gospels.
Right. All that stuff. Lim's book basically aims to show that if you just, you know, look at the evidence calmly, what you find is this amazing snapshot of diverse Jewish thinking right around the time of Jesus.
So the main idea, the thesis, is that these scrolls give us a window into the complex world that both Rabbinic Judaism and early Christianity grew out of.
Precisely. They shared roots in this Second Temple Judaism, this period of exploration, even though they eventually branched off in very different directions.
And how does the book structure this? Does it just jump into the texts?
No, it takes you on a journey. Starts with that amazing discovery story in 1947.
The shepherd in the cave.
Yeah, that classic story. Then it walks you through the painstaking process of like piecing together thousands of tiny, fragile fragments.
That must have been incredibly difficult work.
Oh, immensely. And then it places the scrolls within their historical, religious, and even political context.
Okay, let's start there then. The discovery itself. Mohammed Eddib, the Bedouin shepherd near Qumran in 47, tosses a rock into a cave.
Here's pottery shatter, finds these old scrolls in clay jars. It sounds, I mean, almost like fiction.
It really does. But you mentioned the political context was tricky.
Yeah, extremely tricky. This was right at the end of the British Mandate period, the time leading up to the establishment of the State of Israel. So there was huge upheaval.
And that complicated things for the scrolls.
Immediately. Questions of ownership, who gets access, who gets to study them, it all got tangled up in the politics of the time.
Which I imagine fed right into those conspiracy theories later on about why it took so long to publish everything. People claimed they were being hidden.
Absolutely. That delay became a huge point of controversy. But Lim addresses this head on.
And what does he say? Was it a cover-up?
No, not at all. He makes it very clear it wasn't some conspiracy by the Vatican or anyone else. The main reasons for the delay were, well, first, the sheer magnitude of the task.
Just too much material.
Exactly. You're talking about 900 manuscripts, but broken into 25,000 fragments, tiny, brittle pieces.
Wow.
And the initial team of scholars was very small. Lim puts it down to human limitations, academic rivalries, maybe some possessiveness over the material, but fundamentally just the incredibly difficult nature of the work.
So the mundane reality was more complex than the conspiracy theory.
Often the case, isn't it? The slow, messy human truth.
Okay, so let's talk about what was actually in this ancient library. 900 manuscripts is a lot. How does Lim categorize them?
He breaks them down into three main groups, which is really helpful. First, you have the biblical manuscripts.
So parts of the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament.
Right. About a third of the scrolls fall into this category.
Mm-hmm.
And they found portions of every book of the Hebrew Bible, except, interestingly, the book of Esther.
Huh. Any idea why not Esther?
It's debated. Maybe it just wasn't considered as authoritative by this particular group, or maybe it just hasn't been found yet. But the key thing here is their age.
How old are we talking?
These biblical texts are roughly 1,000 years older than the previously known complete Hebrew manuscripts, like the Leningrad Codex.
1,000 years. That's incredible. It's like finding an early draft.
It is. It gives us an unprecedented baseline for understanding how these texts were copied and transmitted over time.
Okay, so biblical texts are one category. What's the second?
The second group is the sectarian documents. These are texts that seem unique to the specific community that collected the scrolls.
The Qumran community.
Exactly. These texts give us their own rules, their beliefs, their expectations, things like the community rule, which is like a detailed handbook for how they live together.
So it tells us about their daily life and organization.
Yes, very much so. And then you have texts like the War Scroll, which describes this epic, final cosmic battle between the Sons of Light, that's them, and the Sons of Darkness.
Wow, so very apocalyptic thinking.
Extremely. Intense focus on ritual purity, end times prophecies, messianic expectations. These texts are our main window into their specific worldview.
Fascinating. And the third category?
The third group is basically other Jewish writings. These are texts from the broader Second Temple period, some previously known, others completely new.
So not specifically sectarian, but part of the general religious literature of the time.
Right. Things like Enoch literature, Jubilees, other Psalms and wisdom texts. They help us understand the wider intellectual and religious currents swirling around back then.
Got it. So biblical, sectarian, and other contemporary Jewish writings. Now, about that community, who were they? Lim goes with the standard theory, right? The Essenes.
Yes, he lays out the evidence for the Essene hypothesis, which is still the prevailing view among most scholars, though not without its critics.
And what's the evidence connecting the scrolls specifically to the settlement ruins at Qumran near the caves?
Well, there's archaeological evidence from the site itself, Kirbet Qumran. They found numerous ritual baths, these mikvah.
Which points to a big focus on purity.
A huge focus, yeah. Which lines up perfectly with the emphasis on ritual purity you see in texts like the community rule. They also found remains of what looks like a communal dining hall.
Okay.
And textually, the scrolls mention specific figures important to the community. There's the Teacher of Righteousness, this revered, almost prophetic leader figure.
And he had enemies.
Oh, yes. He was apparently in constant conflict with someone they called the Wicked Priest, who most scholars think was probably a high-ranking official from the temple establishment in Jerusalem.
So there was real tension between this Qumran group and the mainstream temple authorities.
Definitely suggests a breakaway sect, unhappy with how things were being run in Jerusalem.
Okay, this is maybe the most mind-blowing part for many people. The impact these scrolls had on our understanding of the Bible itself. You mentioned a dual impact.
Yes, it's kind of paradoxical. On the one hand, the scrolls confirm the remarkable stability of the biblical text in many cases.
How so?
Well, take the Great Isaiah Scroll, one of the first and most complete scrolls found. When you compare it to the Masoretic text of Isaiah from the Middle Ages 1,000 years later, it's incredibly similar.
Wow.
It shows just how carefully scribes copied these sacred texts over centuries. So that was reassuring in a way.
Okay, that's the stability part. But what was the big shock? You mentioned fluidity.
Right. The shock was discovering diversity and fluidity where scholars previously assumed uniformity. Lim really highlights this.
What do you mean by diversity?
For some biblical books, Jeremiah and Samuel are key examples. The caves contained multiple different versions side by side.
Wait, different versions of the same book? Like with different wording or even structure?
Yes, sometimes significantly different. Before the scrolls, the assumption was largely that the Hebrew Bible text had been standardized much, much earlier.
But the scrolls show that wasn't the case.
Exactly. They revealed that in the Second Temple period, the textual form of some biblical books was still, you know, somewhat in flux. multiple editions were circulating and considered authoritative by different groups.
That's huge. It means the idea of a single, fixed Bible canon took much longer to solidify than people thought.
It absolutely does. It shows the process of canonization, deciding which texts and which versions of those texts were ultimately considered sacred scripture, was a much more complex, human, and drawn-out process.
Finding multiple Jeremiahs.
Yeah.
That really changes how you think about these foundational texts. It makes them feel less like they dropped from heaven and more like something assembled, chosen.
That's a great way to put it. And this community at Qumran, they were actively engaged in interpreting these texts for their own time. They used a special method called Pesher.
Pesher? What's that?
It's a form of interpretation where they believed ancient prophecies weren't just about the past or some distant future, but were actually coded messages about their present reality.
So they read the prophets, like Isaiah or Habakkuk, as if they were writing specifically about the teacher of righteousness and the wicked priest.
Precisely. They saw their own community conflicts and hopes reflected directly in the scriptures. It was about making the ancient text speak now.
Which is, I suppose, what religious communities often do, interpret foundational texts to make sense of their own lives.
Absolutely. It shows how central interpretation is to defining identity and maintaining a tradition.
Okay, we have to tackle the big question, the one that probably draws the most public interest. What about Jesus and Christianity?
Right. The elephant in the room, or maybe the scroll in the cave.
Do the scrolls mention Jesus or John the Baptist?
Lim is very clear on this, and it's important. The scrolls do not mention Jesus or John the Baptist by name, nor do they contain any New Testament texts.
So all those sensationalist books and documentaries suggesting they do are wrong.
Completely wrong. Those myths are definitively debunked by the actual content of the scrolls.
Okay, so if they don't talk about Jesus or contain Christian writings, why are they considered so important for understanding early Christianity?
Because their true value lies in providing the essential historical and religious context. Lim puts it perfectly. The scrolls are valuable not for what they say about Christianity directly, but for what they reveal about the specific kind of Judaism from which Christianity emerged.
They paint a picture of the world Jesus lived in.
Exactly. They show us the shared Jewish vocabulary, the ideas that were in the air at the time, things like intense messianic expectations, sometimes even expecting two messiahs, one royal, one priestly.
Really? Two messiahs?
Yes. That idea appears in some Qumran texts. Also, the strong dualistic language, sons of light versus sons of darkness, which we also see echoes of in the New Testament, particularly in John's gospel.
I see. So they don't mention Jesus, but they illuminate the specific Jewish thought world, the concepts and hopes that shape Jesus and his earliest followers.
Precisely. They help us understand the Jewish roots of Christianity much, much better.
That theme of complexity and context seems to run through everything Lim discusses. It really pushes back against simplistic views.
Definitely. One major theme is just the sheer religious diversity in ancient Judaism. The scrolls basically blew up the old idea of a single, unified, normative Judaism in this period. Instead, we see multiple Judaisms coexisting, sometimes clashing.
Which is a good lesson for looking at history in general, right? Resist those neat, simple narratives.
Absolutely. History is usually messier and more diverse than we assume. Another key theme is scholarship over sensationalism.
Lim's focus on the evidence.
Yes. He consistently champions careful, patient, evidence-based work against all the conspiracy theories and hype, like the Vatican suppression claims. It's a powerful argument for critical thinking.
It makes you think about how we evaluate information today, especially online.
For sure. The truth often requires digging through fragments, not uncovering grand plots. And a third theme is the role of interpretation.
Like the Pesher method you mentioned.
Exactly. Seeing how the Qumran community used interpretation to apply ancient texts to their present circumstances shows us something universal.
How so?
It demonstrates how religious groups throughout history define themselves, maintain their identity, and navigate their relationship with the wider culture through the specific ways they interpret their core scriptures.
That's a really insightful point. Let's pull out some key ideas or quotes that capture Lim's message.
Okay. One central idea is that the Dead Sea Scrolls are not simply ancient curiosities, but windows into a crucial period of religious development.
So they're not just artifacts, they're keys to understanding historical processes.
Right. Another key concept. The scrolls reveal not a single Judaism, but multiple Judaisms, each with its own understanding of God's will. That's the core diversity message.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the direct rebuttal to the conspiracy theories. The long delay in publishing all the scrolls was not the result of conspiracy, but of the sheer magnitude of the task and various human limitations.
The mundane, difficult truth again.
Yes. And finally, emphasizing the real value regarding Christianity. What makes the Dead Sea Scrolls so valuable is not what they tell us about Christianity, but what they tell us about the Judaism from which Christianity emerged. Context is king.
Those really summarize the main thrust well. So how can we apply Lim's approach, or the lessons from the scrolls, to our own lives?
Well, one direct application comes from that scholarship versus sensationalism theme, critical thinking and media literacy.
Using the scrolls' controversy as a case study.
Exactly. How do you evaluate extraordinary claims, especially ones that lack solid evidence? Ling's method teaches us to prioritize the slow, careful work of scholarship, look for consensus among experts, and be wary of easy, sensational answers. It's so relevant today with misinformation.
Definitely. Always ask, where's the evidence? What did the specialist actually say?
Right. And another application is about humility and nuance in historical views.
Because the scrolls overturned long-held assumptions.
Precisely. The discovery that the biblical text wasn't perfectly stable for 1,000 years before our oldest medieval copies is a huge lesson. It shows that foundational beliefs, whether they're religious texts, historical narratives, even scientific theories, often have more complex, diverse, and fluid origins than we might think.
So we need to be willing to revise our understanding when new evidence comes to light.
Yes. We need that intellectual humility to accept that history is complicated and our grasp of it is always provisional.
Okay, final thoughts. What was the biggest surprise or takeaway for you from diving into Lim's work on the scrolls?
For me, honestly, it was that textual fluidity, the shock of realizing multiple different versions of books like Jeremiah were circulating simultaneously. It just makes the whole process of how the Bible came together feel so much more human, dynamic, and frankly, interesting. It wasn't static.
Yeah, that really stuck with me, too. It makes you appreciate the choices that were eventually made.
And for me, the final thought is about the ultimate significance, the actual reality of the scrolls. This incredible library reflecting the intense spiritual life and debates of a specific Jewish community 2,000 years ago is just far more compelling and historically important than any conspiracy theory could ever be.
The real story is better than the fiction.
Absolutely. They force us to grapple with the complexity, the diversity, and the deeply intertwined roots of Judaism and Christianity. It enriches our understanding of where these major traditions came from.
A powerful reminder of the value of careful history.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.